Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing, writing life, also great interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres, my video interviews, I should add, my conversation with the lovely Ashley Sweeney, who was the winner of the 2017 Nancy Pearl Book Award for Genre Fiction, is currently live on Author. What an interesting story she has about how her debut novel came to be. You want to check that out at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA by going to pnwa.org, learn about their monthly meetings, their classes, and of course, oh, pretty soon you'll be able to submit your book to the yearly Writers Conference, or maybe if you've got a finished book, maybe you can submit your book to the Nancy Pearl Book Award. Check it out at pnwa.org. A couple things coming up. I will be on the 21st of October. I will be up in Bellingham, Washington at Village Books teaching through Village Books, but I think I'll be doing it at Whatcom Community College. But I'll be teaching a fearless writing workshop, a little 3-hour fearless writing workshop through Village Books. You can find that on my website at williamknauer.com, but I will also be teaching another fearless writing workshop on November 8th in Portland, Oregon. You'll want to check that out. That also, you can find that at my website, williamknauer.com. If you happen to be attending the Writer's Digest Writers Conference down in Los Angeles, I will be there teaching fearless writing and the 3 narrative arcs in every story. So if you're at the Writer's Digest Conference this October, the end of October, well, I hope I see you there. All right. Well, today, it's good to be back, by the way. Took a couple weeks off, but now I'm back, and I'm so pleased to get to share this, my next guest with you. Rachel Scott is a yoga instructor who has logged over 3,000 hours of teaching. Good Lord. She is currently the director of Teachers College and Development for Y Yoga. In addition to her videos and blogs, she contributes regularly to Yoga International, Huffington Post, and the blog at Half Moon. Now, her first book was Wit and Wisdom from the Yoga Mat. That one came out in 2016. But just this year, she's got a new book out, just out, boys and girls, Head Over Heels, A Yogi's Guide to Dating. Oh, I love it. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's good to have you on. Now, I don't know if you're listening to the intro. I wouldn't blame you if you didn't. But if you did, you might have heard me say that what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. But I think to some degree this is true of a lot of things that kind of it was Jeanine Roth I heard say, how you do anything – she was quoting someone who I can't remember. How you do anything is how you do everything. Which brings me to your book. You're a yogi. You teach yoga. Yoga, obviously, is the focus of your working life. And yet, you've written a guide to dating based on your experience on the mat. How interesting is that? How did this begin? How did this, the idea that what you do alone, more or less, physically on a mat, is helpful to the dating life?
Oh, it all started about 4 years ago when my long-term relationship ended. And so there I was, and I was like, oh, my God, here I am. What's happened to my life? I'm single. I'm pushing 40. Mm-hmm. Where is my husband? Where are the 2 children that I was supposed to have? I was supposed to have at least toddlers by that point. And so I signed up for every single dating site that I could find, basically all in one week. So, you know, like Tinder, eHarmony, Match, like anything I could find. And I was shocked and horrified by my experience. But I realized I started going on to these dates and all of my horrible bad habits would come up. And, you know, like my tendency to want to talk about all of the really cool things I'd done so that other people would like me, and my desire to avoid conflict, and, you know, and how what I was afraid of. So everything would come up, and I started to realize that the stuff that we do on the mat, which of course is very personal, I mean, it's the same thing. It's a reflection of ourselves. All of that same stuff was coming up, and I could use the tools of yoga to actually, you know, do this whole dating thing and relationship thing a little bit better. So, I mean, the whole world is really the reflection of who we are, and so it's just about opening our eyes and seeing that.
Yeah, it really is. And so I love it because I like that. So, because yoga, obviously, on one level, it's a physical experience. Obviously, you're using your body, so you're having an experience that is specifically focused on what your body's doing. But as with anything that you start to master, it becomes about more than just the first layer. So I assume it's about, for you, it's obviously about more than just getting your body to hold certain positions for certain periods of time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yoga, it's funny. We have this perception of yoga, really, of being all these physical postures, because that's how we tend to do it here in North America. But yoga originally is meditation, and it's all about mind control. So the physical body is, like you say, it's the first layer. It's the doorway into it. And similar to any discipline that we undertake, whether that's writing or whether it's yoga, anytime we apply ourselves to something, eventually we start to find, like, our stuff. We run into, what do I resist? What am I afraid of? What do I want to just, like, abandon this process entirely? You know, and so the way we do yoga is, of course, the way we do our writing, and it's the way we go on dates. So it comes up again and again.
Okay. So I would assume, so how long have you been practicing yoga? Not just teaching, but practicing it?
Yeah, 20 years.
Okay. And did you like it from the get-go?
Yeah, no, I did like yoga from the get-go. I used to be a dancer and like a gym rat, so going to yoga, I was in New York City like in the 90s, right? And so it was like this weird thing, go to yoga class, like who's doing that? It's this interesting alternative thing to do. And so, I went to it and I really, really loved it. But like most people, I started going because I wanted something physical from it, but then you start staying because you become less insane, hopefully, by going and doing this again.
Right. And so this is my question. So I have a bunch of things I do, but writing for sure is a big one. And I do it because on one level it's effortless, meaning I'm always interested in it. And yet it has also been probably my best teacher. I've learned so much about myself and writing and life and relationships through writing. And all my stuff, as you say, comes up in the course of doing this thing that I really love to do. So when you started doing yoga, what was some of the stuff that came up for you that you actually began to kind of, at least within the, so I used to do Aikido, and I loved Aikido because there was the dojo where you could practice the difficult things in this very safe environment. And I always look upon writing kind of like a dojo. So what came up when you were doing yoga that you were able to kind of deal with in that environment and then bring to the real world, quote unquote?
As you say, it's everything. So one thing would be, self-criticism or seeing the narratives in our mind. So, oh, I'm terrible at this, or judging other people, like, oh, my downward dog is horrible, like I'm the worst yogi ever, or I'm the best yogi ever, I'm amazing. And so starting to witness how much we pigeonhole ourselves and how much we're judging ourselves constantly against other people. And you start to see that in that process, and then see that also reflected in the real world as we go out. Oh, that woman's prettier than I am, or oh, I feel stupid today. We get to see all of that stuff at work. I mean, another huge one is self-limiting beliefs, right? So in yoga, we do all these weird poses, and we have these ideas about what we can do and what we can't do, and the practice teaches us that we can surprise ourselves. You know, some days we're more capable than we ever dreamed possible, and all of a sudden we've got a handstand and we never knew we could. And then some days it's like, nope, it's not there today, and that's fine. And so learning to have more equilibrium through those ups and downs, I think, is also good life lessons.
Absolutely. So I love this. So let's unpack. You opened up two biggies, which is, so I just published a book, well, not just, in May, published a book called Fearless Writing, and the whole point is you cannot begin to write well until you stop caring what other people are, could think about what you write. Oh, you have to get your eyes off everybody else's page, get out of their head. And that's the first thing you brought up. And I can totally, my mom does yoga, and her biggest struggle is not comparing herself to other people as she's doing her yoga, which I could totally get. I could see myself thinking I'm better, I'm worse, and so on. And so that was one of the first things it sounds like you had to deal with, which is to do the yoga just for yourself and not, and I would think it requires discipline even to this day. I know it would be for me. Not
Absolutely.
To ever compare it to anybody else.
Well, it's impossible. Like, our minds are wired to compare. That's what we do.
Yeah.
We walk down the street and we're like, how am I doing? Like, who am I in the pack? What's my pack ranking? Am I at the top of the pack? Am I leading the pack, or am I awful today? Like, our mind does that. So part of what yoga does is it tries to get us beyond, the yogis would call this duality, the seeing things as one or the other. Our mind's beautiful ability to parse things and to compare things and to label things. It's like yoga is teaching us to get back there into the, it might sound hokey, but into the oneness of it all, where we stop parsing things apart and instead see totality. And part of that is just being like, I am, rather than I am and compare ourselves. You know, it's just to be in presence with who we are.
It is not hokey. It is the reality, and it's very difficult to maintain. I love what you said about where am I in the pack, and I hear a lot of people talking about equality, of course. It's a very powerful concept, and there's a lot of debate about it, and people writing books about it, but I think if you want to know what equality is, walk down the street, walk just down any street, and see yourself as neither better nor worse than anyone. And if you can do that, then you can tell me about about equality, because that's just a challenge. And not being any worse than anybody, I think, is sometimes harder for most people, because it's very easy. Like, but yoga is a practice. Every day you go and you practice, and I've learned to see things like equality as a practice. I have to practice it. I'm never going to stick it like a pin on a grid, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know, it's the worst thing in the world. We constantly, it's like we spend the first 20, 30 years of our lives creating all these amazing habits for surviving in the world, and then we spend, if we're paying attention, we start to spend the next 20 trying to change them so they're slightly better. But it's day after day of returning and returning and returning to the same thing. And that's the beauty of the human experience, and that's the beauty of being conscious, is that we can choose to step in and say, like, no, I want to practice this thing that I believe is slightly better, or it's slightly more elevated, or slightly more compassionate. But the rigor of the practice, it's like the persistency is, just like with writing, is intense, and that's really what makes it so challenging.
And so you do a fair amount of writing. I mean, this is your second book, and you write for blog posts and for for Huffington Post and Half Moon and Yoga International. And so I know, as someone who writes, writing is really one of the main ways I connect to my creative self, and also the way I understand what it is I know. When you write, even though you're writing about a subject you have a fair amount of expertise on, do you find that the experience of writing, even a blog post, you learned something that you didn't know before you wrote the piece?
Almost always. It's funny. It's like some kind of writing is for different purposes. Like the first book that I did, which was Wit and Wisdom from the Yoga Mat, that in a way, and I say this in a loving way, but in a way it was a regurgitation of stuff that I knew I knew, where I was, it's more of a book which is like, here, this is this pose, this is how you do it, here is this breath technique, it's how you do it. So in a way it was just, it was the process of just putting into the page some content that I already had in my head.
Yeah.
Whereas
sure.
this book, Yogi's Guide to Dating, this is like my cathartic eat, pray, love moment. This is my soul
really?
On the page. Yeah.
Really?
I call it like a cross between Bridget Jones' Diary and Eat, Pray, Love.
So I should tell our readers, I didn't get a copy of this book before it came here, so I actually haven't read any of it, unfortunately. But now I kind of wish I had. That you started telling me about it. And so do you give us some of your war stories from the dating world in it? Does that include that?
I do indeed. In fact, it's a book that it's kind of, you know, cute that it says it's about dating, but really it's about all relationships. So it starts off with,
yeah.
I mean, dating's just, you know how it is. You go on a date, and dates are so intense because it's super high stakes. You're like, this could be it. Like, this is the love of my life.
Right.
At the same time, you're like, it's just coffee, so it's okay. It's not a big deal. So it becomes a practicing ground to do this stuff. But you know, I refer to dates that I've been on, tell some war stories, but I also go back into my marriage and my divorce and, like, when I was 16 and the first boy I loved. So it's like a whole, there's a whole history of stuff in there.
Well, sure. Mm-hmm. It's so funny you talk about dating. So you say you know dating, and the truth is I haven't been on a date in 28 years. I think it's been – I went on a lot of them when I was a young man. But my brother, who's a few years younger than me, has been on a lot of dates. He's single, and he does a lot of the online dating, and he's at his wit's end with it. He just can't stand it anymore. He loves women, and he wants to be in a relationship, but he finds that the dating thing to be fatiguing. I think the sort of
it's
the ritual of
job.
It.
It's a full-time job. Oh, it's terrible.
Do you want to be with someone just to quit dating? Just so you don't have to
do. I'm done.
No, and you won't do. That's the problem, is that someone will do for 3 months, and then they won't do anymore.
You know what? The funny thing about that is that, I mean, yes, there's incompatibility for sure. I'm not saying there's not. But so many times I've also noticed the times that I want to leave a relationship is just when my own shit comes up. It's kind of like, I have to have a hard conversation with you now. I think I'll leave stage left. You know, so it's funny. We try to make other people fix us. I mean, you know, so often we expect, you know, this is this Hollywood dream thing, and I'm going to find the person, and they're going to make me feel better forever. And, of course, that's not true, but we have this notion, many of us, I mean, you know, just finding that Mr. or Mrs. Right is going to just fix the problem. And I think it's the people who have an awareness of that's not realistic that actually do better, you know.
I will tell you.
Something's wrong and just want to leave. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I've been married for 25 years, actually. And the thing about my relationship with Jen, my wife, is that I've thought about it a lot and I've written about it a lot because it's a very important relationship in my life. But really what was the foundation of it was we were so interested in heading in the same direction. The same direction.
Yeah.
And so and our stuff came up constantly. But I knew early on that the experience of being with her, I wanted to get under it, whatever it was in my own life, partly for the relationship, but the relationship taught me what I was thinking about inaccurately, and it helped me figure it out. I suppose I would have done it on my own anyway, but man, it was helpful because the relationship's like a mirror. If you want to grow, you've got to be willing to change your own stuff, whatever that is. I just don't think my own relationship, and both of us have had to do it. But that's interesting. So you felt like, oh, it's my stuff's up, I want out of here. But you're a very reflective person, Rachel, I believe. Do you deal with your own stuff on the page? Do you have an easier time dealing with it there?
You know what? It was amazing because when initially writing this, I was, you know, writing it kind of as I was going through this experience. And then I wound up editing it after I had this breakup, which was just dreadful. And it was amazing actually to go back and to read what I had written and to edit it. And I mean, honestly, I was kind of like, wow, this is really like, this is, I need to do this. This is smart, which is another example of how we practice. It was kind of like, I wrote this, and I'm like, I need to take my own advice now and do this. So for me, writing has always been a cathartic process for me and a way of, you know, it's almost like I see my truth come out on the page. Even if I'm not ready to admit it, when I write something down, something comes out, which is authentic. And then I'm able to kind of work through what it is. So writing this book has been, was an amazing way of reflecting back on my own relationships and like going back 20 years of relationships and noticing the similarities between how I did things when I was 16 and how I did it when I was 37.
Wait a minute. Do you feel that some of the patterns you had, and I'll tell you, I know the answer because I know it's true for me, that the patterns you had when you first started dating at 16 were still present at 37?
Absolutely.
Oh, God, isn't it irritating?
It's horrible.
Oh,
yes. Terrible. But, you know, then you're like, okay, but just like you say, that's like the persistent practice. It's like, I'm just going to try to remember to equalize myself with everybody. I'm just going to try to remember to be compassionate. I'm just going to try to remember that avoiding conflict isn't always the best solution. You know, the reminder again and again.
You know, I had a guest on this show, a writer, and I asked her a question about what writing taught her, and she said, and I thought it was a great answer, that writing can't save you and writing can't kill you. And I thought it was a great way of thinking that writing isn't going to, you know, getting a book published isn't going to save your life, but it also, if you don't get it published, it won't kill you, that there is, you need a perspective on it. And I think the same is true of relationships, which I think all my problems with relationships when I was younger, before I was married, and even the challenges I've had within marriage, was having to do with expectations around it and what I thought it could bring me or couldn't bring me, and that was where the problem was, not with the relationship necessarily. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, you know what? A lot of times we fail to, in relationships, we fail to take account, like take responsibility for our expectations about things. We just go, oh, this isn't working, or I'm mad at you, or I'm blaming you, or I'm blaming myself, without going like, oh, I had an expectation about that this is what this should be like, and to own that, and then go, okay, so, and then to recalibrate. I mean, I think that expectations are human, but unless we take ownership of them, we get into this place where, at least my experience, I've done this, is where I'll blame someone. I'll be like, well, you did that, and that's just wrong, rather than going like, huh, I think people work in the world like this, and I can own that, and then we can talk about it, so it's not like you're bad and I'm good. It's just that, oh, I thought this is how it worked, right?
That's interesting. So when I first moved in with my now wife, we weren't married at that point, and we were just starting out, and she said, okay, here's the rule. This was when I was like 25. We were like 25. And she said, here's the rule for arguments. No one's allowed to win. No argument's over until we both take complete responsibility for the argument, no matter what. And I was like,
wow.
I love that rule. And that has been the rule for 27 years. No one wins, ever. It's been great.
That's amazing.
Because you can't, even if I come home and I'm in a, or let's say no, Jen comes home and she's in a pissant mood and she takes it out on me. If I still have to be an adult and understand that she's in a bad mood and it's not personal. And if I take it personal and amp it up, that's my responsibility. No one wins.
Right.
No one wins.
Right.
Because if she's in a bad mood, it's got nothing to do with me. But I can take it personal and then the whole thing escalates. It's been great. It wasn't always easy. Usually we'd get into an argument and I'd say, okay, I think this is the time where you're actually wrong and I'm right. I think this is it. We've reached the one, or vice versa. So it usually takes some time, but it's always ended that way. It's been a great – it was her, too. She came up with it, and I just loved it as soon as she mentioned it.
She came up with that when she was in her 20s?
She was 25.
Wow.
Isn't it? I know.
Yeah.
I don't know how she came up with it, but she did. And I was like, oh, I'm all on board. I hate arguments. But it doesn't stop arguments, but it means that you're not trying to beat the other person. You're trying to understand why you got into this. Oh, it's been great.
That just diffuses the whole right, wrong, black and white thing, which is so, I think it's so destructive. I mean,
this doesn't work.
What we like to do, right? We like to do this all the time. We run around the world comparing, and then we feel good when we're right, and we feel terrible when we're wrong, rather than
just
being like, oh, okay. What's bumping up against what here? And then that can lead to greater intimacy, I think. Like, just like you say, relationships are a mirror. If we're willing to look at what our expectations are and then what's actually happening and what the other person's expectations are, then all of a sudden you really have intimacy, which is the true knowledge of someone else, and intimacy with yourself, which, you know, is the whole – which is, I think, one of the reasons we're here, if any, right, to be on the planet.
If not for that, then what? You know?
Yeah.
Honestly? if not for the intimacy of knowing yourself. And the more intimately you know yourself, I believe, the easier, the more effortless it is to intimately know someone else. You know, it just is there's a great teacher named Michael Neal who says, and I think he's so right, that intimacy is actually the natural state of relationship if you let it. But we sort of, with our minds, create these sort of barriers that aren't really natural, protections that aren't necessary.
I like that.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a great quote. What?
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead. I'll remember. No.
It was gonna. I was gonna go a totally different direction. Tell me something funny.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, actually, though, I don't know that it's funny. And now I think it might have flown out of my. See, now it's gone.
All right. It'll come back to you. What I was gonna say is, there's a great quote. There's a book I like to read called A Course in Miracles, and one of the reasons I was drawn to it is the sort of foundation of it is the statement, which is, in my defenselessness, my safety lies. It's the understanding of your it's the understanding that you don't need to protect yourself, that your true safety can be found. And that's certainly, and I practice it with someone I love, and then I take who I know I can trust, and yet I can still feel under attack by if the situation is right. And if I practice it with her, I can take it out to strangers and so on, and even presidents sometimes, if need be. So in my defenselessness, my safety lies. You can meditate on that one for a long time, but I found it to be true.
I love that.
That's
a
good one.
What we're saying, it's like it's fearless writing when you say, like, to be fearless is not to necessarily not be vulnerable, but it's to stand in that. It's so funny. It's like when we're actually honest, there's nothing to be argued with. It's kind of, I find that I get scared and small and want to, like, if I want to lie or I'm holding secrets, that's where things feel really terrible. But if I dare to be honest, even though it feels like I'm about to jump off a cliff, all of a sudden I'm free because nothing can hurt me when I'm being honest, right?
That's right. Absolutely. That was a huge lesson I learned in relationship more than anything else, that when Jen and I were in disagreement, the best thing I could do, no matter how bad I thought it would sound, is to say, this is honestly what I thought at this time, and this is why I did what I did, because I thought this to be true. Maybe it was wrong, but that's what I thought was the truth, and so I acted this way. And I was always fine. But you're absolutely right. I've kept secrets, God knows, and that's when I feel the most vulnerable.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So true.
It's so true. So hard.
Well, Rachel, this sounds like an awesome book, and you seem like an awesome person, and I can't believe, I mean, I sound like your old mom. I can't believe you're not married. It doesn't make any sense. But I'm sure there's a lucky guy out there, maybe listening to this right now, who'll get to know you. But before that happens, our time is almost up, but I have one more question for you.
Okay.
Get ready.
I'm ready.
What I'd like you to do is finish this sentence. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you?
To be messy.
To
be messy. And, like, and I guess what I mean by that is, like, the best writing that I've ever done hasn't been the considered, intellectual, rational, let me edit this to the bone kind of stuff, although that can be useful later. But the best writing I've ever done is when it just comes from my guts and when I just put it on the page. And I think that's, like, life, too. Like, I don't get so far with my measured, calm, intellectual conversations, but in life, like, some of the best things I've ever done have been the huge, messy, just like going like, I just feel and or leap and just do. Those have been some of the best moments. So to remember that.
I like it. I like it. I'm with you. I'm a tidy guy who likes to be messy. I look tidy, but inside, I tell you, it gets kind of messy, and I like it that way. Well, Rachel, best of luck with this book. Are you going to be doing some sort of – will you be talking to people about it? Can people – find you and listen to you and share in your wisdom? How can they find out about you?
Yeah, the best way to find out about me is to go to my website, which is racheyoga.com. I managed to get Rachel Yoga. That's the domain I get. It's awesome.
It's not bad.
I know, right? And on that also are some of the meditation. I put meditation and yoga practices that actually go with each chapter of the book. So you can meet me there. You can get in touch with me through there. You know, I'll be doing a book launch. Right now the ebook is out, and I'll be doing a book launch once I get the print one out. So I'll have information on there when that happens too.
Awesome. Well, best of luck with this, and I look forward to your next project. I bet you got more books in you.
We'll see. We'll see. This one took a lot. This one, again, is like soul on the table, but there's always stuff brewing, right? So
absolutely.
We'll see.
Just wait and see. Stay messy. Okay, Rachel, take it easy, and thank you so much.
Belle, thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Oh, thanks. Well, yeah, she's right. Stay messy. Ernest Hemingway called it the first shitty draft, I believe was his term, and I think there's a lot to that. There's a lot to that. Okay, I'll be back next week. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries, and remember, just go and find and do something you love. Do something you love.